We haven't got a reading this week, not because I've gone off the Bible or anything like that. It's just that I couldn't find a passage this morning that sort of encompassed what I wanted to say, but it's odd verses. But I want to start off by saying there were two announcements this week that I heard, and one announcement this week that I read, that all three, in a way, blew me away for different reasons. The first was early in the week when I got onto a bus, a bog standard London Transport bus. Not this one that's coming up, but listen. There's something wrong with the computer, I would imagine. Can you push me on? Push it on one.
Kingston. Please hold on. The bus is about to move.
You'll get that. It happened again. We'll leave it on. Get on the bus. You just get into your seat. The butler, you pick yourself up off the floor. And then you hear a wonderful announcement. Listen, Pet, watch. And listen, Pet. Get the bell. Whoever that is. And come up for the stop. Very soon. Get around through. Stop. Go.
Kingston.
Let me start.
Please hold on. The bus is about to leave.
Please hold on. The bus is about to leave. After it's moved. So you picked yourself off the floor and then you get the announcement, this bus is about to move. And I thought, surely that, I heard about it. And then I got on the bus and it's really happening. I thought, they are looking into it, apparently. But I heard of the news about a week ago, and it was this week. So, and then there was this announcement. I've just gone back to this.
These are the three things that you need to be a successful bobsled driver. One, fearlessness. You have to be able to live life on the edge. Two, determination. You have to be able to focus as a driver for at least 60 seconds without a lapse or a distraction. Three, discipline. Because the team, the country, relies solely on your ability as a driver to qualify. My goal is to get this team representation for this country and this continent at the Olympic Games. I'm a natural competitor. Anytime I step anywhere competitive, I want to win.
Really need to be one of those IMAX cinemas to appreciate going down there. What was special about them? They are the first African team in the bobsleigh in the Winter Olympics. That's 30 years after, of course, the Jamaicans got there. The Jamaican, two well-known areas of high snow. You know, you go there for your skiing holidays. You wouldn't think, but they have made it. They have made it to that. That's fantastic. And they've got their end of merit. Remember the Eddie Eagle rule that said, which requires Olympic hopefuls to compete in international events and be placed in the top 30% or the top 50 competitors, whatever is fewer. So they are in the top 30% or top 50. I'm not sure how many countries there are that have bobsleigh, female bobsleigh teams. But the Nigerian ladies have done it. They've done it for Africa. That's a great announcement. First one was silly. That one, great. Last one blew me away when I read it. I think I've read it before, but it just didn't. And that is, I am. It's Mitz. It's me. It's. I'll let me try. Oh, unless I'm. No, I can't. Try, that's it. I'm the God of Abraham, God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. It's from Exodus. Exodus chapter 3 and verse 6. It's when God speaking to Moses at the site of the burning bush. Remember the story? Moses was brought up in Egypt. One day he saw his people who'd been turned into slaves. He knew they were his people, but he was brought up as an Egyptian in an Egyptian household. And he saw his taskmaster beating one of the Israelite slaves, and he kills the taskmaster. He thinks that nobody has seen him. So what happens then is that in hiding the body, he is seen. And then a couple of days later, he tries to sort out a dispute between two of his Israeli people. And one of them says, you're going to kill one of us as well. So he knows he's been found out, so he runs away. Gets married, has children, and 40 years later, he has this experience in front of the burning bush where God says, I am the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob. Weird. Oh, well, I'll work it backwards. It's working. They also occur, the words, in 1 Kings 18. This is Elijah. If you remember, he has a battle with 400, at least, prophets of Baal plus others. And the contest is, we'll both build a huge sacrifice, but we won't light it. We'll allow God, your God or my God, Elijah said, to come and light it. Their God was Baal, our God was Yahweh. And so they do this. Elijah just makes it a bit more difficult for himself by throwing water all over his. And then he asks for the fire, and it comes down and burns up the sacrifice. And it says, the Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. Not words that God says this time, but words that he prays to God. God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, Jacob and Israel are interchangeable. They're the same person. Let it be known today that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant and have done all these things at your commands. Elijah uses the words that God said when he met with Moses. He may have read them. Not quite sure when the Pentateuch was actually written, but it could be that they were looking at the law, so they did the first five books of the Bible, and he had read that. David also uses it in a prayer that he prayed to God, and he says, O God, Lord God of our fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, keep this desire in the hearts of your people forever. Keep their hearts loyal to you. It's right at the end of 1 Chronicles to do with going forward with the temple. The phrase is used in the New Testament. It's used once by Stephen. Remember, Stephen is appointed to serve at tables in Acts chapter 6. Then Acts chapter, towards the end, he gets hauled in front of the religious court of the day. He invited to speak. So he goes all the way through the history of Israel. And at one stage he says, after 40 years have passed, an angel appeared to Moses in the flames of a burning bush in the desert near Mount Sinai. When he saw this, he was amazed. As he went over to look more closely, he heard the Lord's voice. I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Moses trembled with fear, did not dare to look. He was quoting from Ezekiel. Wasn't anything in a way new. Unfortunately for, fortunately for Stephen, depends how you take it, he was martyred. They couldn't cope with the whole of his speech. You read that in Acts chapter 7. But that's another sermon or two. I am the God of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob. We've all learnt about these three people if we've gone to Sunday school. Because I had this image at one time that you did Abraham, Isaac and Jacob every year in Sunday school. It seemed to come up. But then I never went to Sunday school until I was about 10. So I never had the advantages of that. So let's have a look at Abraham. Abraham, born in Ur of the Chaldees, and heard from God to go on a message. So he started off down here, went up to Haran and then down to Cana. Settled down. You may think, well, wouldn't it have been quicker to go across there? Well, true, it might be in distance, but the main trade routes were the idea that he, were the routes that he took. And then he settled down. Now, what other exploits can you think of, positive exploits, that Abraham did? Have a chat with the people sitting around you. What other exploits did Abraham do or have? Remember, these aren't what he's promised. It's what he actually did. I'm sure all you learned people have got lots of ideas. Anybody like to give me one thing that Abraham, one of his exploits, something that he did? Wave a hand. Sorry? I don't know, tell me what it is you're thinking of. Something that he did. No, Abraham didn't do a burning bush. But, yeah, that sort of thing. That'll do.
Did he collect the tribes together?
Well, no, that was Joshua. Yeah. Close. Anybody else? Well, he went on a big journey. That's not bad to start off with. Because actually, yeah.
On behalf of David,
yeah,
he took his nephew Lot and his father from Ur to Haran, and there his father died.
That's true. And what did he do with Lot? What did he give Lot?
What did he?
Yeah, Abraham. Abraham and Lot got to a certain place, and what did Abraham do, even though he didn't have to do it?
He gave his land
to Lot. That was a big thing, wasn't it? Stood there, he had the right as the older person to choose the best land in the distance, but he said, you have the best lot, and Lot chose the best and completely messed it up. You could say, what else did he do? What's his other big thing that he did? Hang on, Mike.
He nearly sacrificed his son.
He what?
Sacrificed his son, Isaac.
On?
Mount Moriah.
Right, on Mount Moriah, yeah, he was God. Did he just have a whim? Did he just do it on a whim? Yeah, I don't like my son anymore, I'll just sacrifice him.
God called him to,
that's right. God asked him to sacrifice his son. And he was all there for it. Yeah, we had a ram.
He saw the vision of three men standing.
Sorry?
He saw the vision of three men standing.
He saw the vision of, what, the three visitors? Yes, he had three visitors who promised him a son. Because actually in his life, as he said, when they went, did he say the same as Zachariah? When he said, you know, you're going to have a son, he went, I'm old and she's past it. Yeah, this is the Aryan version, Essex. He had a name change from Abram to Abraham because he was going to be the father of nations. But he's a great man. In Hebrews, he's called a man of faith. The brain cells are working now.
Did not you offer sacrifice to Melchizedek?
He did. Why did he offer sacrifice?
No.
That's the... Yeah, he offered...
He told a fib about his wife. He said she was his sister.
That wasn't a great exploit. That's right. He did sacrifice after winning the battle. He went out and Melchizedek is there, who in the book of Hebrews is a type of Jesus. Even just this first thing, that he has this tremendous journey. We actually don't appreciate, I don't think we always appreciate what it actually means. Anybody here been to Australia? New Zealand? All right. Well, actually, Australia and New Zealand, it's actually New Zealand. If you go the exact opposite of us in the UK, actually we're in the sea just south of New Zealand. But so New Zealand, so that's half a planet to go around. You say, well, Abraham only went sort of across the Middle East there, hardly has anything. And this is one person's journey from New Zealand to England. Can you guess what type of transport he used? This is modern day. No, he used even worse than that, he used a bicycle. He was a cyclist. Yeah, that's why he went on the land route, not on the more sea. So, you can nearly see that, can't you, in the thing? But, of course, when we think of a journey, we think, we must have some suitcases. These are two suitcases. That's what the wife has, and then the husband just has a carry-on luggage for his stuff. But, of course, when Abraham was journeying, there would be Abraham, there would be he'd have to carry his house with him, his tent, there'd be his family, there'd be his flocks of sheep, there'd be his herds of cattle, there'd be the workers who were looking after the sheep and looking after the cattle, there'd be their wives, their families, probably some of their own sheep and cattle as well, and they'd all be moving mostly on foot. It was not like going on your holidays, or even going for a month to New Zealand. You know, this was a big affair. They would be quite long. So it was quite a thing just to travel in those days. Now, there are some people who think, when they hear about Abraham, they think, I can never actually be like Abraham. I'm not as great as him. You know, God would never want me then because I'm not a great man or a great woman. You know, I have to be good. You know, we read that when he was in the Chaldees, when he started off, he was a believer in God. And he was prepared to sacrifice that. prepared to sacrifice his one and only son. I couldn't do that. Abraham, as we've been reminded, did have his faults, or a fault, because there was a famine in the land. And Abraham, this is before his name changed, went down to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was severe. As he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife Sarah, "I know what a beautiful woman you are." He may have been a bit biased, but she seems to be. "When the Egyptians see you, they will say, 'This is my wife, this is his wife,' and they will kill me, but will let you live. Say you are my sister, and so that I will be treated well for your sake, and my life will be spared because of you." Abraham lies about his wife, or he gets his wife to lie. It was a sort of half trick. She was related to him, sort of distantly, if you follow the genealogies through, but was still basically a lie. And he was treated well, because it says, "When Abraham came to Egypt, the Egyptians saw that she was a very beautiful woman. And when Pharaoh's officials saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh. And she was taken to his palace. He treated Abraham well for her sake, and Abraham required sheep and cattle, male and female donkeys, men servants and maid servants, and camels." In the end, God had to step in, and God stepped in, sorted him out. So he lied once. He was still great. Actually, we read of this great man of God that he lied again. Not to the same king, a different king, but actually it was the same lie. He said, "Say you're my sister." God doesn't call us for our greatness, our goodness. God calls us when we're a long way away from him, when we're his enemies, when we're sinners, when we say and do and wrong things. Doesn't have to be worthy. Remember when Sue and I first came, I think it was the second Sunday, or the Sunday prior to us being inducted. And there was a group of men came in that evening called Tough Talks. They would lift heavy weights and get Michael to come up and lift heavy weights with them. And most of them had been on drugs, most of them had been in prison. But then they came to know Christ. There was nothing great about them, they would say that. So they came, and Christ is for them. So let's leave Abraham behind us, and let's look at Isaac. Same question. What exploits can you remember what things that Isaac has done? Anybody got any answers? Hang on.
He favoured his eldest son.
He favoured his eldest son.
Yeah.
Or was it his younger son? No, his eldest son, you're right, yep. Esau, yeah. He favoured Esau. Anything else? Sorry?
He dug a well.
Yep. I get the impression, though, he doesn't do a lot, does he, really? The biggest event he has in his life is laying on his back on top of a heap of wood with his dad over him with a knife. Or we remember him for his sons. But we don't remember Isaac. Well, there's one thing, there's a lovely line in it, which is when Abraham sends off his servant to get a wife. It says, as she rode in, they fell in love at first sight. Oh, no, it's lovely. But he doesn't do anything. He just carries on living, really. You know, he also doesn't get it right, because he blesses the wrong son at the end. He blesses the younger one instead of the older one. But that wasn't altogether his fault, because his wife was also in collusion with the brother. Isaac really is overshadowed by others. Father's great, but Isaac, in a way, just carries on the family line, the living. He's more well known because of his father and because of his children. There are those who say, oh, I've got no talents really. Why would God want me? Actually, Isaac had a similar problem to his dad as well. Famine hit Isaac and his family as they were living in Cana, and they had to go to the land of the Philistines because God told them to. And as they were approaching, Isaac turns to his wife and said, when the men of that place asked Isaac about his wife, he said, she's my sister, because he was afraid to say she's my wife. He thought the men of this place might kill me on account of Rebekah, because she is beautiful. And then we read that when Isaac had been there a long time, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked down from his window and saw Isaac caressing his wife Rebekah. He'd been found out. So Abimelech summoned Isaac and said, she's really your wife. Why did you say she's my sister? Isaac answered, because I thought I might lose my life on account of her. Then Abimelech said, what is this you've done to us? One of the men might well have slept with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us all. Abimelech, at this point in Isaac's life, was more honourable than Isaac was. Some people think, I'm not honourable enough to become a Christian. But all God asks is that you give your life to Christ and follow him, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. True, he was willing, it seems, to be the sacrifice. But then I thought, if Abraham tried that today, think about it, taking your son up on a hill, laying a pile of wood that you're going to set fire to, and stick your only son on that piece of wood, and then are going to kill him, Isaac would have been taken away from Abraham by the social services. He would have been deemed to be an unfit, abusive parent. Yeah, God told him, and God supplied the ram. But it's quite difficult. Maybe Isaac was suffering from PTSD. Can you imagine it? Yeah, you are lying out, and there's this knife coming. He must have gone through traumas. And he might have. That may be why perhaps he retreated. I'm going off Bible here, by the way. He retreated into himself, and that's why he didn't do anything, really. Because he was so traumatized by his experience. But God is still willing to say, even to him, you could say, somebody who isn't, be, I'm the God of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob. We've just got one more to do now. Jacob. In your groups again, whatever. What's Jacob done? What did he do? So any suggestions? What did Jacob do? No, that's him in front of a rock that he placed to remember God. That's supposed to be, yeah, on the right is Jacob, and on the left he's holding a rock. Yes, a rock, I'm afraid. It's a stone.
It's not very clear.
No, it's not. It's clearer for me at the back. It's a stone that he put there because he'd met God. That's what they did in those days. We put up big edifices called churches. They just stuck a stone in the ground.
Is that why they put stones on the grave? No, like we take flowers.
I know. The answer to that is June. Yeah, I haven't got a clue.
Oh,
I doubt something you can I can research. Right, what else did Jacob do besides sticking stones in the ground? Anybody, sorry, I can't. He
took his brother for birthright.
Yeah, it wasn't a great exploit, that was it, really? That was pretty nasty, pretty off. Because his brother came home early, he said, "I'll give you for a stew, I'll have your birthright," which means whatever you should have had, I'll have.
But his brother accepted it, so in fairness.
But his brother accepted it. Yeah, if you were dying of hunger, you might accept whatever. You have to remember that. Yeah, it's easy to say it. Yeah, you're right. But it's a bit off. Anything else Jacob did?
He was the father of Joseph.
He was the father of Joseph. Yep. Just Joseph?
Oh, no.
He had 12 sons. 12 sons, yep. Joseph was the penultimate one. He had a big dream one night, didn't he? And he saw angels going up and down a...
Ladder,
stairway, whatever, Jacob's ladder. That's what do we have Jacob's ladder today? Anybody seen a Jacob's ladder today? No? Well, I thought, you know, the rope ladder with the wood slats across that you use for a fire escape at times, they were called Jacob's ladders.
They used to use them on
sheds. There you are. See? Yep. Anything else? He actually worked. If you remember, he worked for 7 years for his wife, and then his uncle tricked him by giving him the elder daughter. So because at those times bigamy was all right, he worked another 7 years for the lady that he really loved, who was the mother of Joseph. But he did rob his brother of his birthright. And actually most of his exploits happened after this rather than before it. Joseph and Esau became estranged. But they did come back together after many years. His beginnings in life were not good. But God was still proud to say of him, "I am the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob." The amazing thing is that when we follow God, God says, "I am the God of," and you can put your name in there. You don't have to be well known like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You don't have to achieve any greatness. We all know that in some respects we will fail God as they did. We will sin. But God will still say, "I am the God of dot, dot, dot. I am the God of Richard Owen. I know that my children could never say, 'I am the God,' or 'We follow the God of William, William and Richard.' My grandfather was called William. Because my father was the eldest son, he was also called William. And me, because William and William didn't believe in God. So God wouldn't have been able to say that. But we should be proud that we have a God who created the universe to say, I am the God of. And one way that we show our pride in being able to have that said about us is baptism. You've heard about baptismal classes that are going to be going on the Sunday mornings for 4 weeks. If you haven't been baptized yet, I would urge you, seriously think about it. Have a chat with a mooter. If we get too many people, well, we can run 2 classes. That's no problem. Also, you may not be a member of Ashurst Drive Baptist Church, but you follow God. My question really is why? As Christians, yes, we are all, if you like, born into that family of God. But as people who come regularly to Ashurst Drive Baptist Church, we should be part of that family of that church. By being a member and helping us all to find the way God wants us to move as a church. If you want to talk about that, see a mooter, myself, or one of the deacons. Remember that God is proud to say, I am the God of. Just as he said, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Your name could be there if you know God.